and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Saturday edition. Today's date is September 10th, 2011. Of course, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you here for another important broadcast here. Ladies and gentlemen, we are one day away from a 10-year, 10 years from the day that Zionist Israel and its henchmen within the American government pulled off 9/11, murdered innocent men, women, and children, and then proceeded to use the event to create a police state, to lock us down, to take our civil liberties. What we had left of them at that point, we're not nearly as free as we once were. And it's getting worse. And now, of course, the excuse given back in the 2004-05 period to prop up the economy, they printed money. They knew darn well, anybody knowing anything about monetary inflation and knowing about printing of money would know that a housing bubble like they created would end badly. I knew it would. And if I know it would, I mean, I'm just a lowly a professor of finance. How would they not know? They were supposedly, you know, these wizards of Wall Street and wizards of this and that. Well, they're not wizards of anything. They're connected to the criminal Zionist network. You can see that Paulson and Greenspan and Bernanke and Summers and all of these criminals are Sabbatean Jews. They come out of the same camp of the criminals that go back in our history a few hundred years and into Zionism, and in fact have adopted many things that come from thousands of years in the Talmud and Zohar and the rest of it from different places. So, you know, the problem we face, ladies and gentlemen, is defining our terms. We have to understand when we fight someone or something or some entity or some political movement, we have to understand the nuances of their movement, because otherwise we end up scattergunning our attempts and we injure innocent people or peoples who, you know, given a fair chance, would change sides. You can see that many people in this world, a lot of the Christian Zionists running around the streets of America. I think they're estimated at 30 million people in America who are Christians who support Zionism. When you see those kinds of numbers, you get worried, because the simple truth of the matter is these people are doing the bidding of a small group of criminal leaders that don't share the booty. They don't share the bounty, ladies and gentlemen. They don't share the power, but certainly they enslave the same group that's helping them. Those Christian Zionists are not going to escape the depression that was created by these criminals. They're not going to escape the tyranny that's coming down. They're not going to escape the gun confiscation they're going to attempt. Certainly it'll fail, but it's still going to inflict injury upon them. And then there's the Jewish community itself. Many people in the Jewish community are completely unaware that their leadership has these plans and does these things. But yet, and they don't even get the connection when they see the Rothschild fortune exerting the kinds of power it does around the world, and then naming streets in Israel after Rothschild, or having Rothschild build a $1 billion court system, a court center in their country, or having people like Mark Rich and Ronald Lauder from the Estee Lauder billions build a new university structure for the Mossad in Herzliya. People don't see the connection, because by and large, the group that is the most propagandized are the Jews themselves. And these people go out and do the bidding for these criminal leaders, and they do it without resistance. They do it without question. Not very much different than the way the American military has been reacting around the world at the hands of this criminal gang. Now, I'm going to bring a new guest on today. We are certainly not close to one another, although we did have a nice conversation yesterday. I want to bring a whole range of different ideas and views about history here, because the history of these people is very important to understand who, when, where, and why they did all these things. His name is Pastor Eli James, and he has been studying, looking into, understanding these conspiracies for more than 30 years. And You know, the knowledge of the crimes of this gang are not a secret if you do the digging. It's there for you to discover. And Pastor James has done that. I try to bring views of all different types to this programming. You'll understand that I find righteous people within every group, and I try to bring them on, and I try to make sure that the main thing that they follow is the golden rule, and that is do unto others, and that they're not, the people that I bring on are not out to injure me, hurt me, or hurt the people I know in ways of stealing my liberty or duping me. And you don't know every time. You just have to, you know, wade in and do the questioning. So I'm going to bring up Pastor James right now. Eli, are you with me?
Yes. Well, actually, you just exemplified what's wrong with Christianity today. You said the golden rule, and you quoted, do unto others, right? You see, if you chop off the quotation, you don't get the whole truth.
Well, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I'm sorry, I forgot the second half. I'm sorry.
So do unto others as you please, right?
No, or do unto others before they do it to you, yeah.
Well, that's Judaism.
Yes, that is exactly Judaism. And you know, I want to ask you a question. This is one that I've asked a few people, but when you dig through the Old Testament, the Jewish text of the Bible, and you look around for love, kindness, and all, you put the word search on for those words, you get a hand full of examples, but you put vengeance and murder and kill, and you get tons of pages of examples. This is not a loving God these people were following.
Well, yeah, that's the common perception, and in fact, many Judaic Christians would agree with you that you have just correctly analyzed the Old Testament. But I disagree with that assessment of the Old Testament.
Okay.
Because The what's really going on in those days is you have to call it a race war. It's the history of a race war between two ethnicities, the Adamic people and the descendants of Cain, okay? And then whenever you're talking about vengeance, divine vengeance, the divine vengeance occurs almost exclusively against two particular groups. One is the Canaanites, who are the enemies of the Israelites, the Adamic people. And then the Adamic people themselves, because Yahweh tells us time and time again, do not fraternize with these Canaanites. They're going to get you into trouble. They're going to teach you evil ways. And if you learn their ways, then I will have to punish you too. Okay? And so it's all about morality.
Well, you know, here's the thing that I have about race. And all different races, black, white, Latino, Indian, doesn't matter. Because I was once called a mongrel. Because,
oh, really?
Yeah, well, I have American Indian in me.
Okay.
So the simple truth of the matter is I'm not purely white. I have some American Indian from the Wampanoag tribe in Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
So And I've got friends in every community in the world, including Indians and Chinese and so forth. And I find there are good, quality, kind, loving people in all groups. And now, there are also, in all groups, evil people. And I'll define evil by people who know better than to do something, but do it anyway. I mean, or some, you know, so we all make mistakes, Eli, and this is one of the things that the tenets of Christianity has always always held close, is that if you're willing to do better, and you're willing to admit to the error and do better, and you are sincere in your wish to do better, then you can soldier on in your life with some dignity.
Well, that's called repentance.
That's right.
Okay,
yeah.
Give up your evil ways and turn to the good. A perfect example of the contrast of what you're talking about here is the Fukushima, Japan, and how the Japanese people are so honest that when they found goods and money floating around in the wake of that tsunami, they made every effort to return it to its rightful owners. Okay? Now compare that to what happened in New Orleans.
Yeah.
When you have these welfare critters, these welfare creatures, I mean, you're talking about actually a new breed of people created by the welfare state that have been taught that the government is supposed to feed you, house you, clothe you, and medicate you for your entire life. And these people don't even understand that the taxpayer has to foot the bill.
But here's the thing, Eli. You made the very important point right then to say that they were created by government
right.
policy. Can you imagine a government so malevolent that they would actually go out on a, and bring to the fore a system that would create that kind of dependency in the weakest, in their weakest citizens. Now, once I heard, how do you judge a society? Well, you judge it by how it treats its weakest citizens.
Right.
Now, some people have said how it treats its elderly. They're very, very fragile, or how it treats handicapped people. I say how it treats the weakest in general. And that weakest might be poorly educated, or it might be poor health, or poor nutrition, or poor all kinds of things. Our government has failed so miserably in treating its weakest citizens. It never succeeds in lifting people up. I'm 55. I don't know what your age is, but I have witnessed my entire life our government spend trillions on things that actually tear us down.
That's right. That's right. Well, it goes back to the 60s, the so-called Great Society of Lyndon Baines Johnson, and all the Zionists who precipitated this this tax war against white people. And you know very well, as I do, the vast majority of taxpayers are middle-class white people, the hardworking people of America. Their money has been confiscated from them to bring up these welfare recipients.
Okay. Yeah, but see that's you can't say that to blame it on the people getting it. You got to blame it on the people in charge because that's
what I'm getting at.
Yeah,
the people in charge are the Zionists.
Yes, they are,
and the welfare state is the deliberate policy to bring down the middle class whites and subject them to the New World Order, and by using you got to help these poor black people. You have to pay your taxes so they can be equal to you. That's the message, right?
Well, here's the thing, though. I have a friend who grew up in the 50s and 60s, of course, and she went on to be a great doctor, and she's African American, and she said that when she was growing up, of course, they didn't have welfare free
right.
handouts. Her father had to work. Her mother had to, you know, take in laundry to bring some extra money in, and she had to and put your shoulder to the grindstone,
right.
and there
work
was
ethic.
Yeah, there was, and this was in the black community. She said, you know, Dal, when I grew up, most black families had mothers and fathers in the home.
And today,
that has been destroyed.
It's totally destroyed.
And it was done by policy.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yep.
Is Zionist policy is to create a race war between the various races and use the so-called welfare state. You know, in those days, it was never actually promoted as the welfare state. It was promoted as, you know, anti-discrimination, okay? But the whole point of it is you're taking away from productive people the fruits of their own labors, taxing them, you're stealing from them in order to promote non-productive people. And that's exactly, and you just pointed out, by promoting non-productive people, you have actually destroyed the black family.
Well, but here's the other thing, okay, because this goes on in France here, and I'll give you a good example of what they've done here. They imported to France back in the early 70s, late 60s, Algerians.
Mm-hmm.
And they are of a different color. They're Moorish, so they're of a different configuration
right.
completely, and a different religion.
Yeah.
They promised them when they brought them here jobs and an opportunity. Well, what they gave them instead was minimum wage jobs, and they housed them in these chicken coop high rise buildings.
Right, so just like here in America.
Just like in America. And then guess what they did? They told them that if you work hard, you'll have upward mobility. Well, they didn't
right.
give them any opportunity. Now, here's what happened. I'll give you an example, a real good example of this. I knew a family I think there were five children in the family, and all the two sisters were always the best students in the entire school they were in. They went on to college. They graduated summa cum laude. They could not find a job when they got out of university, not a single offer. Now,
right.
any summa cum laude graduate from a major university gets a ton load of offers. They couldn't beg, borrow, or steal a job because they were from Algeria. They were Muslims. And I thought to myself, I'll give you another one. My wife and I went to a place to eat that had dancing. And one of
all dressed up and no place to go.
Well, and we went to dinner, and so one of my cousins here, one of her cousins, is married to an Algerian. They wouldn't let us into the business. They wouldn't let us in to eat.
Right.
And I thought to myself, oh my goodness, this is blatant. You know, now here's the crux of the issue. What happens now that if you've taken away opportunity, you don't give jobs, you house them in a chicken coop, you then start vilifying them in the press, which is what they've done here in France, and you tell everybody in the plebiscite, the middle-class French person, that it's their fault that this happened.
Right.
Nobody remembers it. Yeah. And so guess what they're trying to do in France? They're trying to drum up a race war.
Well, what happened in 2006?
Yeah, no.
When the suburbs of Paris were burning?
Yes, these are the ghettos. These kids have 60% unemployment.
Right, right. So the Jews know very well that when they train these people to work and then they don't get jobs, they get dissatisfied. And who have they blamed? Not the Jews, but the visible people on the streets. Like you said, the corporation run by a white guy.
So the point I'm trying to make here is that what we've seen in each place, okay, they don't want us to come together and say, look,
yeah,
the policymakers in the Zionist community are to blame for this. Let's string them up. Let's tar and feather them. Let's
right.
jail them. Let's let's change this so that the fruit of your labor determines your station in
right.
life.
And that's what the Bible says.
Yeah,
Paul says, he who will not work shall not eat. But here you find the politicians and the Judeo-churches doing the exact opposite of what the Bible teaches. You are to reward people who work hard, and you're not to reward people who don't work. That's bottom line.
That's right.
That's morality. Okay.
But see, this comes from, and you remember the reading. I'm sure you've read the literature on the way communism was formed with Engels and Marx and these
yeah.
ideas.
Oh, I'm going to talk about that.
Yeah, and this is important because this was basically if you've removed the middle class and you remove people for a second and you take away the Second Amendment, if you take away the middle class and the Second Amendment, you've got control of the country.
That's right. That's right. And Russia had a huge middle class.
Yep.
They actually had a very large lower class, which the czars were actually eliminating, because they were eliminating serfdom and giving all those gentry territories, lorded land owners, and giving that land to the serfs.
Mm.
Okay. They were actually in the process and succeeding greatly, because they were going by the example of Abraham Lincoln and the American system, which had farms, you know, family-owned farms, okay? They were transferring the serfdom system to the American system, and that was well underway. Bolshevism destroyed all that and made slaves out of all Russians.
That's right. That's exactly right.
That's what happened.
Now, let's talk about Lincoln for a moment. Of course, Lincoln, being a pragmatist, early on in the war, did take loans from New York bankers. And in fact, when he saw the result of what he was doing and how he was being used, he said, "Well, look, the Constitution gives me the right to print my own."
Right.
And so, you know, why aren't we doing this? He looks around and says to himself,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, why are we borrowing money when we can print our own? Right.
Well, and isn't it interesting that John Wilkes Booth, of course, the actor, the guy that
yeah.
is he was connected to Rothschild money,
he
of course.
Was. And his real name was Botha. He was a South African Jew, and the gravestones of both his parents and grandparents are inscribed in Hebrew.
Well,
proving that he was Jewish.
Well, and you know that the way they ginned up the war over in the World War One was in Sarajevo, a Jew shot the Grand Duke.
That's right. They're a Freemason.
Yeah.
The Jews were in total control of Freemasonry by that point.
That's right. Well, the Grand Orient Lodge and out of Paris, and that's exactly right. Now let's do a little bit of talking about history here, Eli, because one of the things that my listeners have known for a long time, I've told them the full story of of this conspiracy and how it dates back. One of the things that I've always wondered about and questioned is this Murano crypto Judaism that has taken place. We see it with Sabbatai Zevi in the Donmei. We see it with the Murano Jews in the Southwest in the United States. As, you know, this guy. Do you remember this guy? What was his name? The ex governor of New Mexico, that was a big friend of the Clintons.
No, I don't recall.
Well, he's Jewish, and all right. But his name is not Jewish. A lot of the old money Jews are crypto Moranos that came over early on and settled in the Southwest. And
actually, you know what? The history of the Latinos, the word Latino actually comes from the Murano term Ladino. But the original Latinos were those Murano Jews who had to leave Spain because Queen Isabella expelled them. And some of them even boarded on Columbus's ships and came to America.
Well, that's right.
That's the origin of the term Latino. It comes from the Murano term Ladino. Yeah.
Well, but isn't it interesting? Let's kind of segue here. Within a generation and within three generations' time of Columbus's success in finding routes to the Americas,
right.
And all of the gold, you know that what these Spanish did, these Muranos did, is murder their way through the tribes.
That's right.
They just killed everybody and stole the gold.
Yep.
And shipped it back to Spain.
Yep.
And as soon as the Jewish interests in Europe realized Spain was filling its coffers with gold, they set upon Spain and proceeded to loot Spain. And Spain within a couple of generations was down the tubes. And guess where the Jews were that stole all that money? They were centered in London, and they were centered in Denmark. Not Denmark, in Amsterdam.
Right. Yeah, Holland. Yeah,
and Holland, and that was the same. Those were the same Jews that sent William of Orange back on the throne, and who had Jewish roots. And that was the same group that put what's his name there? The guy that led the revolution.
Cromwell?
Cromwell. Yeah,
okay.
They financed him.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Well, very few people, in fact. I want to quote from the speech that I gave last Saturday when I was in West Allis, Wisconsin, protesting the black flash mobs that were indiscriminately singling out white people and beating them, okay? And what I told the audience there was, hey, if you want reparations for slavery, then you have to go back to the Jews of Wall Street. Because their ancestors brought the slaves over to America.
That's right, Aaron Lopez.
Yes, Aaron Lopez. And I quoted several quotations from Jewish sources and from the Nation of Islam that stated very clearly that the Jews were the merchants of the slave trade, and they were the masters of the slave trade in the Middle Ages, okay, even up to the Civil War.
That's right. And they were also the guys making all the alcohol. Aaron Lopez had a bunch of sugar getting on his boats, bringing it up to Newport, Rhode Island,
right.
and then he had all that sugar crushed down and made into rum, and then he sent back all the rum to Africa and got everybody hammered on rum.
Yeah, well, they got the black chieftains drunk on the rum and said, okay, now that you're drunk, how cheap can you sell us your people so we can take them back and have them be slaves, okay? That was the slave triangle. So they took the rum from Newport, Rhode Island, and also from Charleston, South Carolina, because that was also a heavy slave trading center.
Yep.
And then they traded for slaves, and then the slaves went over to South America, okay, to be traded for other goods, and those other goods and a few slaves as well were brought up back to Newport, Rhode Island. And that was the slavery triangle.
Well, but here's the thing, too. See, what people don't know is the way that these black Africans were treated. On the way back, as many as 60% would die of disease.
That's right.
And, I mean, this inhuman, unbelievably inhuman activity that these people just made believe wasn't happening. But see, here's the thing, Eli. They convinced a nation of non-Jews that it was okay, too.
Right, sure. Well, slavery, and that's why and this is a good point on Christianity. In fact, the Bible predicted that the Christians would eliminate slavery, okay? And that's what we did. because we saw the immorality of what we were doing. You know, you're not supposed to harbor someone against his will, you know, to be your worker and never have an opportunity to go elsewhere, okay? That's forbidden, okay? Now, in the Old Testament, the word slavery is misunderstood because that always meant an indentured slave, someone who got into debt and became a worker for that person who had the right to let him go. And, in fact, every 7 years, that person had to be let go for that term of that year. And then there was the Jubilee, in which that person had to be let go, period. Now, the Jews don't practice the Jubilee.
No, they don't.
They don't practice the seven-year Sabbath. So, if they don't practice the religion of the Old Testament, what religion do they practice?
Well, there we go. Here's where we get into Zoharitis Sabbateans who practice child sacrifice and stuff.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's what they do. In fact, you know, they claim it was a canard to blame the Black Death on the Jews poisoning the wells of the Christians. Well, you know what? The Jews in Palestine are doing the same thing today.
That's exactly right. That's right.
They're doing the same thing today.
And, you know, to the credit of, I didn't give much hope for, I'm not sure about all the political machinations going on in Turkey, but Erdogan there, the leader of Turkey, finally woke up and headed off a coup by the military, fired most of the generals, got rid of most of these generals in a big arresting. They arrested a bunch of them.
Right.
And
he was deported, no doubt.
Well, he lucky for him, because I'm surprised they haven't shot him dead yet.
Yeah.
And now he's saying, you know, Israel, you guys are criminals, and you can't starve people to death and bulldoze their olive trees and
and bulldoze their homes while they're still in their homes.
Or drive over people like Rachel Corrie, probably the greatest human being of the... We should be naming main streets in our towns and cities after Rachel Corrie.
That's right. She stood up against the Zionist war machine.
That's right.
And she did.
One of the most courageous human beings, I think, that I've ever... On my front of my website, there's a speech given by this girl, this little girl.
She was a little girl, yeah, I saw that.
It gives you chills. And so, you know, there is good in the world, and there are good people. And, you know, when I will go out...
You know what the old saying is, Daryl? No good deed will go unpunished.
Well, not with these people in charge. That's true.
Right.
That's more true than anything. But here we are now in a situation where our government needs to create mayhem and discord,
right,
discord in the world.
To maintain Big Brother's dictatorship.
Yeah. That's right. And they're gonna stop pitting group against group, of course.
Yes.
And really, what we need to do, Eli, in my view, is come together and say, look, we're not the enemy of each other. We're the victims.
Right. Well, I think it was Harry Elmer Barnes who coined the term perpetual war for perpetual peace. Okay? That's what's happening in the world today. You have these corporations. And Lincoln predicted... He had a really horrible feeling about the outcome of the Civil War, because he said these corporations have been enthroned. Enthroned was the word that he used, okay? And he said, I have great trepidation for my country because I fear that these corporations will take over the country. And, well, guess what?
They did.
They have.
Well, and do you remember growing when you... How old are you, Eli?
I'm 65.
Okay, well, you got 10 years on me. But do you remember growing up in school, they teach you about the Civil War, and they talk about carpetbaggers?
Right.
They were the Jews.
That's right.
And they went south and stole everything.
Right. Well, in fact, General Grant had issued a military order to get the damn carpetbaggers out of my territory because they're messing things up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He understood who they were.
And you know, there's the other thing, too, that's perpetuated on our televisions and on our popular culture. And everybody thinks that the La Cosa Nostra, the Italian mafia, is a top of the food chain in its own right. Simple
right.
truth of the matter is they're street workers for the Jews. And they have always...
Arnold Rothstein was the big cheese in New York.
Right, but see, everybody, all these Italians funneled their money up to these Jewish interests.
Right. And they pretended to be Catholics, right? Right? They would get Catholic funerals, get Catholic marriages, okay? And I'm sure when you got the mafia, let's say you're a Catholic priest, and the mafia comes and says, we'd like to have a wedding. Here's $50,000 donation for your church, okay? Even though you know they're mafia.
Yep, yep.
What are you going to do?
Well, if you're a moral person, you say, look, you know, if...
Yeah, go to the synagogue.
Well, but here's the thing, okay? The Catholic, now this, let's we're going all over the place because this is
yes.
This is interesting conversation. We know that Ignatius Loyola was a crypto Jew,
right,
who set up and became a Catholic priest in Spain and set up the Jesuits.
Yeah.
Now, Within a short period of time, their criminality and their activities in the name of Catholicism was so awful that Pope Clement forbid them.
Right.
He said, "You guys are disbanded. You're a bunch of thieving animals."
The American CIA.
Hey, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's an exact parallel.
That's exactly right. And they were feeding off the Catholics in a terrible way. Now,
yeah,
a lot of good things in my youth came out of Catholicism, and I'm not Catholic. I wasn't raised Catholic, although I'm baptized Catholic. My father was Catholic. But we had the CYO, and we had the boxing league, and we had basketball,
right,
and we had, and I remember
services.
Yes,
yeah,
there were services, and there was Catholic charities if you were hungry, or there was clothing needs. All of that has gone to heck. And I remember,
right,
Father Sullivan, listen to this one. Father Sullivan, this great guy, big man, big sportsman, he was a man's man, and he became a priest. And he quit the priesthood, and nobody could understand why, Father Sullivan, you quit. He says, they have inflicted homosexuality on the entire priesthood. He said, I cannot go to a meeting or go to a conference or go to a seminary where there isn't a predominance of homosexuals everywhere.
Right. It's crept into the church by design.
By design. That's
yeah,
right.
By design.
And then they got the leader of the church, whose mother was Jewish. This was the last pope, Pope John Paul,
right,
John Paul the Drooler.
Yes, his mother was Jewish.
Jewish, that's right.
Right.
Now, interesting that they would allow...
It makes him a Jew.
Well, that's right. It makes him a Jew. And here's the thing, though, Eli. They kept him as the figurehead of the Catholic Church, looking
right,
like this gooey, drooling, sick man. In other words, how more feeble could we make this whole group look?
Right, right. Well, yeah, it's a conspiracy against the Catholic Church,
and yep,
no doubt about it.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of the French author who wrote a book on that subject, The Plot to Destroy the Church.
Yep.
Was the title of the book, The Plot to Destroy the Church. And he talked about how...
Panay.
Yeah.
His name is Panay.
Maurice Panay, yes.
That's right.
And he talks about the fact that the Freemasons, rather than having... You know, because when you talk about the Jesuits and the Freemasons, although they were both secret societies, terroristic secret societies, they didn't always see eye to eye, and they had internal squabbles. They had squabbles against each other. It was spy versus spy.
Yeah.
Right? Freemasons versus Jesuits, okay? In the early 20th century, the Freemasons said to themselves, this is what he reports, that, okay, we're tired of the spy versus spy nonsense. We're going to infiltrate the Vatican.
Yep.
That's what they did. John the 23rd was a Freemason.
Yeah, I don't...
He was a Freemason.
Yeah.
He was part of Propaganda Douay, which is a Freemasonic lodge in Italy.
Well, but here's the other thing. See, back in 1827, according to the author that I helped put a book together with, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, The Synagogue of Satan.
Oh, right, yeah.
In 1827, the Vatican turned over its cash and its management of its money to Rothschild.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, the Rothschilds.
So if you control these guys' money, you got the church by the short, you know, you got them.
You just said the magic word, money.
That's right.
Because I wanted to talk about the Federal Reserve Bank,
mm-hmm,
and why America is drowning in debt and chaos today. Okay, let me quote a few patriotic Americans so that the listeners understand what's really going on and that the money issue is behind all of the world's problems today. It definitely is. And you said the Rothschilds, yeah. The city within the city of London, namely the empire of the city,
they call it the crown.
The crown, and the city within the city has its own mayor, and the queen has to ask the mayor to allow to be allowed in.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right. Yep.
It is a totally separate entity from the city of London. It's controlled by the Rothschilds. That's where their banking empire is focused. Okay. Now I'm going to quote some patriotic Americans, founding fathers, and Abraham Lincoln to establish what's going on today. Thomas Jefferson, quote, "I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around the banks will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered."
Yep.
Look at America today.
Yep. That's right.
What has happened?
Yep.
The banks have stolen everything we used to own.
That's right. And now we have to go now hat in hand. Now, here's
That's
the interesting
right.
thing. But here's the interesting thing. Not only have they taken the money of the individual, but they've got the government so indebted that by virtue of, so in other words, it's indirect control over you and direct control. They've got control no matter where you turn.
Yes. Well, Thomas Edison put it best. He said, if the government can issue a bond, which is a note of debt, it can issue a bill, which is a paper currency that doesn't require any debt. Now, why should I, you know, it would be absolutely stupid for me as an individual to spend, to borrow money when I don't need to borrow any money.
That's right.
Why shouldn't I just spend my own money? Oh, the government just can print it.
Well, and Edison was a victim of a terrible victim of the Jews.
Yes, he was.
When he his camera that he designed in Edison, New Jersey,
it was so copyrighted. Yes.
Yes, it was copyrighted, and they grabbed it and went to the West Coast and started making films.
Yeah, because California had no extradition law.
That's right.
Right.
Yes.
That's right. Actually, Chicago was the earliest center of filmmaking, and then, of course, as you just said, moved to the West Coast. You know, and Edison tried to sue the bastard, but he couldn't get at him.
Well, and he actually spent a fortune on Pinkertons running around the streets of Los Angeles trying to arrest them for it.
Yeah, right. Here's Daniel Webster. "The people wonder why financial panics occur so frequently. I can tell them why. It is to the interests of the bankers and brokers that they should occur. It is one of the specious methods by which these despotic and utterly useless knaves," he's talking about bankers, "despotic and utterly useless knaves rob the producing, manufacturing, and mercantile classes of their honest earnings. It is one of the chief plans by which this infamous ring is riveting the chains of slavery upon the limbs of labor. It is one of the chief means adopted to build up a money aristocracy that shall live in idle luxury and ape the pretentious heirs of European nobility."
Yeah. Neo-feudalism, Eli.
That's right. It's feudalism.
Yeah. Yeah.
Feudal, you know how do you spell feudalism? C-H-A-N-G-E. That's how you spell feudalism. Okay? Here, President
change we can believe in.
Yeah. Oh, should the stock of the bank principally pass into the hands of the subject of a foreign country, the Rothschilds, and we should unfortunately become involved in a war with that country, what would be our condition? All it's we're talking about Iraq and Iran now. All its, or I should say Afghanistan, maybe Iran, all its operations would be in aid of the hostile fleets and armies without, controlling our currency, receiving our public monies, and holding thousands of our citizens in dependence. It would be more formidable and dangerous than the naval and military power of the enemy.
Yeah.
He's talking about this is why he vetoed the charter of the Second National Bank.
Yeah. And you know that America could never be defeated from an army attacking
right.
it. But
right.
There's a quote from someone quite famous says the way they're going to do it is they're going to sneak on in and treacherously take over from within.
Yes.
And they've done.
Yes.
But they did it in the Ottoman Empire. The Donmei did it. And so
right. And here I'm going to quote Lincoln and then I'm going to quote the Hazard Circular, which was actually published by the Rothschilds to explain that they understood perfectly that America was a threat to their world oligarchy, okay? But first, the quote from Lincoln. I briefly mentioned it earlier. The money power preys upon the nation in time of peace and conspires against it in times of adversity. It is more despotic than monarchy, more insolent than autocracy, more selfish than bureaucracy. I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of our country. Corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corruption will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudice of the people, namely by dividing it into parties and sects, until the wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed.
And there you go. You just said the whole thing, and it even included the race baiting nonsense and open borders where they're letting people stream in on
aggravate the race problem, right?
Yep.
And what happened? The robber baron period followed shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
Robber barons, monopolists.
Yeah.
Monopolists who buy politicians to pass laws to grant them monopolies. That's what the Federal Reserve Bank is.
But Eli, you know, we can even talk about now, though, how do they ensconce these leaders in power in the Congress and in the Senate?
Right.
And
well,
they do it through homosexuals. They groom these homosexuals from the beginning.
It's Freemasonry. It's the tactics of Freemasonry.
Well, and the CIA...
people up. You know, getting them on tape having a flirtatious affair with some woman. You know, like Gary Norton, I can't remember the name of the politician. He was a Democrat, and they circulated a photo of some girl in a bikini sitting on his lap who was not his wife.
Yeah, Hart.
Gary Hart. Yes, Gary Hart. And that ruined his chances, right?
But, I mean, come on, the guy was doing it on a boat called Monkey Business. How easy was that?
right. But they have the power not to circulate that photo.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
If he was one of their guys, they wouldn't have circulated that
photo.
Well,
but no, to be honest with you, he was a CFR member.
Okay, yeah, but he probably wasn't playing. They had somebody else groomed, right?
They wanted someone else. That's right.
Yeah, they wanted someone else, okay? And now I'm going to quote the Hazard Circular published in the London Times, 1865. If this mischievous financial policy, speaking of Lincoln's greenbacks, which has its origin in North America, shall become endurated down to a fixture, then that government will furnish its own money without cost. Can you imagine that? A government furnishing its own money without borrowing it from a banker?
Yeah.
Continuing. It will pay off debts and be without debt. It will have all the money necessary to carry on its commerce. It will become prosperous without precedent in the history of the world. The brains and wealth of all countries will go to North America. That country must be destroyed, or it will destroy every monarchy on the globe. Well, of course, those monarchies were controlled by the Rothschilds.
Well, that's right. And well, they knew darn well that lending to people was not the business they should be in, but lending to governments gave them the...
more profitable.
Much more. And then inflict...
That's bookkeeping, too.
Well, and on top of that, then they inflicted war on each other, and the French side of the Rothschilds would give weaponry to the French, and the German side over in Frankfurt would give them to the Kaiser, and then they'd go to war and make money on both sides.
Yeah, well, Gutla Schnapple, the mother of Meyer Amschel Rothschild's five sons, said, "No wars happen in Europe unless my sons approve it." Right? That's what she said.
Yeah, that's right.
She was telling the truth.
Well, Wellington's army...
You actually tell the truth.
Well,
right?
Wellington's army was financed by Rothschild, and so was Napoleon's.
Yes. Well, not so much Napoleon. Napoleon's army was financed by the Rothschilds indirectly. Because what Napoleon's army did was it confiscated the wealth of the Jews as it marched through Europe, right? Napoleon did not trust the Jews.
No, he didn't.
He did not trust them.
Did you know that he converted? Did you know that he converted on a trip to Cairo? He converted to Islam.
Really?
Yeah.
I never heard that before. That's interesting.
Check on the net. He actually, part of what he did when he visited Cairo.
Yeah.
was they did a conversion for him, and that was part of him as when he was emperor. And
fascinating.
It is fascinating. Look, the guy codified his own law system that I don't particularly agree with. However, look at the mess that our legal system's in.
Right. Well, see, part of the strategy, and Bismarck stated very clearly that the Rothschilds fomented the Civil War.
Yep.
Okay, they fomented it. They wanted to divide America because, as I just quoted, that country must be destroyed. They actually donated at least $1 million to the abolitionist movement. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Financing it from behind the scenes. At the same time, Judah P. Benjamin, a Rothschild agent, was the Secretary of the Treasury of the South.
That's right. He worked for Jefferson Davis.
War was inevitable.
That's right. And had it not been for the Tsar... Who told the French and British interests that if you get involved in this war, I'm coming in on the side of Lincoln.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Remember I said earlier that the Tsars had adopted the American system, okay? They were learning from American economists that the government's supposed to issue its own money so that the people can be free. But if bankers issue money, they'll be slaves, all right? The Rothschilds never succumbed, I'm sorry, the Tsars never succumbed to having a Rothschild central bank in Russia. And this aggravated the Rothschilds to no end. So just as America had to be destroyed by the Rothschilds, so Russia had to be destroyed by the Rothschilds for the exact same reason.
Yeah. Okay. And here's the thing. Rosenfeld, roots back, you know, another crypto, roots back to Dutch Jewry.
Delano, so they were Dutch Jews, yes.
And then we have Rockefeller, also from Jewish roots.
Right.
And we've got the other plants across the country, Edward Mendel House, another Jewish guy,
right.
Colonel House.
Wilson's advisor, yes.
Yeah.
You know what Rockefeller's favorite saying was?
What?
Competition is a sin.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He's a monopolist.
Well, of course.
Why are we supporting these monopolists? It's crazy.
Well.
But they have, in addition to the fact, you mentioned, you know, how do these people maintain power? In addition to the fact of subverting people and setting them up and bribing people and extorting from people, they assassinate people.
That's right.
And the other politicians get the message. When somebody comes out and publicly makes a statement against the Rothschild money system, and suddenly he's dead.
Yeah. Well, I was told
that at least 6 American presidents.
Well, Eli, you know, back when I started out and I started talking about the Lubavitch and about the Rothschild and everything, nobody in the alternative press was doing it. Now there had been people in time that had done it, but I came out first and said, "Look, there's a problem here." Now, of course, I got kicked off GCN, and they flipped out on RBN. Yeah, they didn't want me. Well, everybody kept telling me I was going to be murdered, and there was probably a possibility of that. But I, and there were people rummaging through my rubbish cans at 3 a.m, and my dog was going after them. And I took a trip to Paris to pick up my cousin from a flight to Europe. She was going to visit.
Okay.
And we're walking through the Latin Quarter and just looking around and whatnot. And we sat down at a cafe, and these people, these two men sat with us. And then we went to another cafe, and lo and behold, I see these two guys again. So then my cousin said, "I'm going back and taking a nap. I got jet lag." And I said, "Well, I'm going to sit here on board the Seine and look around and blah, blah."
By the way, the American listeners need to know that that's not uncommon in Europe because Europe is more crowded. And if you and some and your friend are sitting in one booth, it's not uncommon for people to just say, "Excuse me, can we have part of this?"
Well, actually, no. We were sitting at the cafe on the roadside kind of thing, looking out. Anyway, my cousin goes and takes her nap, and I'm sitting there. A man sits on one side of me, one on the other, and they proceed to tell me that they're from the Mossad, that they're following me around Paris, and that I better watch what I'm doing, and that the way they would get me, this is what they said to me, the way it would happen is that someone would put poison in my food in my house. So he said, "Next time you're making a recipe, how do you know we haven't poisoned you?" And I said to the guy, I said, "I don't know that." And I got to tell you, I told my cousin when she got up, I said, "These guys said they were from the Mossad, they wanted to poison me."
Well, that's what they did to Congressman Louis T. McFadden. who was the head of the banking committee and was doing his absolute best to tell the people of America that these Federal Reserve banksters are nothing but a criminal,
yep,
organized crime syndicate.
Syndicate, that's right.
That's what they are.
That's exactly
and
right.
He was poisoned.
Poisoned. Yep.
Yes, he was. He was poisoned. Let me give you a couple more quotes. Are we on for an hour? Or?
Yeah, we've got about 10 minutes left.
Okay, well, let me give people a couple more quotes because they need to hear this. The money power has established a more vicious form of universal slavery over the American people than ever was established over the American Negro. G.G. McGeer in his book, The Conquest of Poverty, and here's one from Russia. Money is a new form of slavery, a distinguishable and distinguishable from the old simply by the fact that it is impersonal, that there is no human relation between master and slave. The master resides in the bank, and the slave is trying to keep his home, right?
Yep.
But
yep.
Now that the slave is losing his home, losing his job, and their jobs are being sent where? To China to take advantage of slave labor? That's what's happening in the world today, folks.
That's exactly right.
Rothschild economics.
Well, now, listen, let's talk for the last 10 minutes here. We've got about 9 minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about the waking up of the masses. Look, my website, when I started out, I had 5 visitors a day. Now I've got thousands, okay?
Great.
Truth of the matter is there is an awakening. And as I told you in the private call, millions of people have downloaded the Ben Friedman audio.
Yes.
And this means that anybody who listens to Benjamin Friedman in that Willard Hotel presentation is absolutely convinced of his sincerity and the fact,
yep,
that he's not lying. You can hear it in his voice.
Yeah. Yeah, he says there's a Jewish conspiracy to destroy America.
That's right.
And he's a Jew saying it, right?
That's right. And so you can hear it. And once they hear that, the many, many people go on the road to education, and they have. And it's global. And I get people from every continent in the world. I only get 40% of my listeners from the United States and Canada.
Okay.
The other 60% come from the rest of the world. And the truth is that we have made inroads into the truth, and I believe people are primed and ready,
mm-hmm, ready
to learn the full it's facts.
Great awakening, yes.
And I think and my friend David Pidcock, a very learned man, a man of letters, a very well known man in Britain, said they're losing, and not only will they lose, they're going to lose badly. And look at right now, all the money that has been stolen out of the public purse has gone to save their banks, and it's still not working. Their banks are failing.
Let me just talk about the situation in Greece on that point, because as far as Christian ministers go, I'm probably the only one that has any knowledge of economics, right?
Mm.
Okay, and what's happening in Greece, and the Bible says, you shall not cheat people. You shall not use improper or deviant, diverse weights and measures. What is inflation?
Of course, it's exactly that.
It's a diverse weight and measure. When you print more money, you lose the value of the money that's already in circulation. You're stealing from people.
That's right.
Okay? Now, what's going on in Europe, and especially in Greece, with all of the devalued currencies, that Greece can't pay its bills. Okay? They've been trying to give Greece more inflated money to pay its bills. But nobody wants any of this inflated money because everybody understands it's become more and more worthless, and you can't pay your bills with money that's constantly being inflated. Just look at Weimar Germany.
That's right. Well, and so the bond dealers trying to sell this can't find a buyer.
That's right. There's no more buyers.
That's right.
Because nobody can afford it. You can't solve inflation by printing more money.
Well, you can in the beginning, and then all of a sudden it stops. Well, guess what? We've reached tipping point here.
That's right.
And
the con game is at its final point.
But guess who's taking the hit here? And I'm going to give you some good news here.
Okay.
Credit Agricole, the third largest bank in Europe after HSBC and BNP Paribas, which HSBC and BNP Paribas are Rothschild banks, so is Credit Agricole a Rothschild bank. It's going bankrupt. So is Societe Generale, one of the largest.
Bank of America is going under, too.
Bank of America, another one of their stooge banks. They are in trouble.
Right.
And we're watching in real time. Now, granted, they still control the levers of power within the governments that they have. But their underlying bloodstream is their banking system, and it's going down the crapper. Right. And I
made the prediction not too long ago that once the Rothschild control of the economy goes under, then they will no longer be able to control the talking heads on the networks, who are nothing but front men for their corporations. When those people no longer get paid, guess what's going to happen? They're going to spill their guts.
Yep, yep. And the ones that don't are going to run for cover.
That's right.
So we're on that. We're approaching that point quickly.
We're there.
Yeah.
The global collapse is happening right now.
That's right. In real time, that's right. And you're going to see by Monday and Tuesday of next week. I predicted years ago that all this would happen. You know, my background is finance, and I'm a
right.
My education.
So you and I could have some good discussions here.
Well, you know, the thing about the finance side of this, Eli. I mean, I went to NYU where Greenspan got his degree,
uh-huh.
and so I learned. You know, and a lot of people.
Reserve chairman, Jewish, right?
Well, of course. Here's the thing. I believe the lies. I drank the Kool-Aid for
right.
a number of years.
Drank the poison.
Well, I did. I thought that what they were saying was honest and true. And when I realized that I had been lied to, I made a point to find out what the real game was. And of course,
right.
I know now. And here's the thing: I made a prediction. I reported the collapse of the entire financial system in 2007 in the month of October, from beginning of October when Lehman Brothers went down. I said this is the big beginning of the end. This is it.
Well, in fact, you just hit on something that I just sort of realized a couple of days ago. But why is it that these crashes always seem to happen in the autumn? Okay, and maybe you being in the financial markets, maybe you can tell me if I'm right or wrong here. I think it's a result of the fact that they're waiting for the last harvest to come in to hedge their last bets on, you know, pork bellies, you know, wheat, other sorts of grains, to see, can we still make money off of this, you know, and this is like the last portion of the year, you know, where the harvest has anything to do with the economy.
Well, that might have something to do with it. I really don't know if that's the principal reason. One of the reasons is that the fiscal year for the biggest government in the world and the largest spender in the world, the U.S. government, it happens in October.
Okay.
And we don't have a January to December year in finance. We have an October deadline for fiscality. And so basically, as things go up and...
All their bets have to be hedged by the end of October.
That's right. And so what happens is you start seeing, after the people come back to work from their summer breaks, and, you know, nobody in New York's bank...
Well, they're thinking about which to disinvest and invest, right?
That's right. Well, in the summertime, you know, they're all out in the Hamptons, Sabbateans, they're having orgies. Who knows what they're doing out there?
Right. Well, they're definitely strategizing for the end of October, too, right?
That's right. Well, and of course, a lot of it, who can we start a war with? Who can we blame for this? Who can we do
right.
for that?
And isn't it true that a lot of these investments are actually done by computers?
Well, there is high-frequency trading.
Have control over that?
The new algorithms coming out of these high-frequency trades basically trade between each other in order to give you a false sense of market participation. There is no more fair settlement anymore, mark-to-market settlement, and basically now it's just a big Ponzi scheme.
Right.
It always was a little bit of a Ponzi scheme when it used to be fair. Back in the 50s and 60s, if you came to market with a good idea, there were takers for your bonds and for your stock, and you did have an opportunity because fair. You know, we've never experienced true capitalism in this world because behind the scenes always had these criminal oligarchs that if
right.
they did not want you to succeed, you would not.
Yeah.
And there are machines out there right now, perpetual energy machines that you put in 20% of the energy, it comes out with 100%. So you have a
right.
gain of 80.
Okay. Understood. Let me make one more point, and this is very important for any student of economics to understand. There is a huge difference between capitalism and free enterprise, namely the American system. The American system is based on government printing the money and spending it into circulation, free of cost, free of debt, to the people.
That's right.
Capitalism is when Jewish bankers lend the money into circulation and or spend it on their wars.
Well, you know, that's not what capitalism's definition is, but we've never experienced it.
Yeah, their definition is free enterprise, but there's a big difference between how the money is put into circulation.
Well, and it's the same thing as you know, the people in socialism over here. If you told them they're actually communists, they'd say, no, sir. I say, well, you know what? I go down a list of things that happened in communist China, and then I'd say exactly the same here in France.
It's starting to happen in France. When people start starving, and you saw it in 2006, the riots in Paris, and it's going to get worse. You've seen riots in Greece, in Spain, other countries, Ireland. You're seeing riots
in Great Britain.
It's going to get worse
in Great Britain.
Yes.
Those last riots in the UK, of course, and here they are, right? This is the funniest thing.
Yeah.
They're blaming the kids on the street now.
Yeah.
The kid's got himself maybe a Game Boy and a sweater, and he's going to, and guess what? They're going to give him 10 years in prison. And all of these bankers who've been stealing everybody blind, not one of them has been arrested.
Right, exactly. And that's the same story here with the flash mobs. You know, they've trained these black people to be criminals, and with the attitude that Whitey owes me, and so they have these flash mobs and go out and be Whitey. Well, now, wait a minute. Whitey's paying the taxes for the welfare state. So this is deliberately concocted to create a race war.
That's right.
That's Rothschild strategy, sorry.
Okay? It is, and it's here,
yeah.
Too. Same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, very good, Bradford. I'm glad we finally got a chance to talk turkey.
Well, you know, we get the hour went by real quickly.
How's our today?
Well, you know, I'm sitting up here. You have up in my loft here. I said this before we started, ladies and gentlemen. It's 90 degrees plus up here, and I'm sitting here in like a sweat mop here. It's unbelievable. However, it's...
You didn't need to know that.
Well, you do, because you know something. I just put the effort in, and the results. Results are out of my hands.
Right, exactly.
Now listen, Eli. You know,
put it on your computer because he might short circuit it.
There we go. Well, you know, listen, Eli. Interesting, because there are other historical things we can touch on in another interview,
yes.
If you'd like.
Absolutely.
You know, but it's interesting to have all divergent and different opinions about how things have happened. Here's the thing about what I said about the books on my site. There's 40 different books on the site. Some of them written by Russians, some by Germans, some by Canadians, some by Australians, people all over the world, at different times, from different religions and different backgrounds. They all arrived at the same conclusion, all of them. Now, that's, how could that be? It's not a coincidence, it's reality. And they arrived...
They're persecuted, don't you know that, Daryl? All these billionaires are persecuted.
That's right. They're not getting enough Prada bags in their Christmas stocking, you know.
They're not getting enough sweat and blood and pound of flesh out of the poor working people, right? Right. Let me just give people my website, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
So that's, yeah, www.anglo-saxonisrael.com. And it's a biblical website, biblical history. I'm a Bible historian, and I trace the ancestry of the Jewish people, not to the Judahites and Israelites of the Bible, but to the Canaanites and Edomites and Khazars. It is a gigantic historical hoax, folks. The Jews are not God's chosen people.
I agree. Ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
Yeah, well, first of all, what's the most racist statement you can make about somebody? I'm better than everybody else by birth.
Yeah.
That's racist.
Well, yeah, it is, and the Jews practice that, but it's disguised as real. You know, we're here to help you. We're promoting racial integration, but they don't practice it themselves. How many blacks live in Jewish neighborhoods?
Not a one.
Not a one.
No.
How many Jews have moved into black neighborhoods?
No, they don't.
Just
no.
The poorest. Right?
Well, you know,
okay.
Here's the thing. I, you know, I would move into any neighborhood where there's kind and loving people there to share my experience with.
Yes.
And I would do it, and I judge people on the, you know, Martin Luther King was used by the establishment. He was used.
Was.
However, the things that he said ring true. One of them is you judge somebody by the content of their character.
Right.
And if he's an Indian or a Chinese or a Vietnamese or an Aborigine from Australia, if the content of his character gives you a warmth of purpose and a kindness, and he follows the golden rule, then that person can walk down the street with me anytime.
Well, as you said at the beginning of the show, the black people of Harlem, for example, in the 1950s, had stable families.
Yeah.
What went wrong? The government started promoting disintegration of the black family. It's called welfare.
Yep.
It was dishonest from the very beginning.
It's devastated the country, and now it's not just the blacks that receive welfare. It's trailer trash and the rest of it are all on the stuff.
It's the war against the family. You know, why is it that only women who abandon their husbands get welfare?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's by design.
Yeah. Well, we should talk about too is the women's movement under Gloria Steinem and the homosexual movement is completely Jewish controlled.
I just came up with a great definition of a feminist. A feminist is a woman whose husband is the government.
I've never heard that. I like it. I like it.
Hi, Gloria.
I want your permission to use that.
Sure, absolutely. Go ahead.
Hey, Eli, it was an interesting conversation. I appreciate you spending the hour and 10 minutes here with me. It's been great. I know it's still early where you are. Me, I'm going to go downstairs and try to cool off here.
All right.
And I will talk to you soon. You know, send me emails if you've got information that is interesting for the public, and I'll get it up on the site.
Will do. Thank you, Daryl.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the end of the show, and of course, I want you to all please take care of your families and be well. Bye-bye now.